while I was going through this breakup and everything, they dumped me. Like, I got fired from this team. They said I wasn't performing enough. And I was going through a breakup. And then I remember it like it was yesterday. Nobody's ever fired me or got rid of me because of I wasn't performing. So now I was at an all-time low.
Today we had on Anna Oliver. We talk about how to be consistent in selling luxury real estate, changing markets during a recession, and why we decided to partner up and collaborate on listings.
The Broke Agent presents Overask Podcast.
Anna Oliver.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Good. Anna, you are with the agency as well, and I'm very excited about this because I love the agency. I talk about it on every episode, so yes. Congratulations.
I love the agency too. It's been 1 year already.
It's been 1 year?
Yeah, April 11th.
Okay, awesome. Well, Anna, you are an absolute monster boss. We call you the Tracy Tudor of Toronto.
Do we? Oh, I didn't know that. I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah. Yes, it is a compliment.
That's a huge compliment.
For people who may not know you, can you kind of tell us a bit about yourself, a bit of your backstory?
Yeah, so I'm going into my 20th year of real estate. I grew up in Kingston, Ontario, and my parents were both military and ex-military, and I'm the youngest of five. I don't know what else. I had a great childhood. I grew up in the campus at the military college in Kingston, and always I was kind of like the tomboy on the street because most of my friends were guys, and I was sort of the tomboy and everything. Worked very hard. My parents are both very strong disciplinarian, good work ethic. And my goal when I was a kid, I either wanted to be a fighter pilot or I wanted to be a sports agent. And okay. Unfortunately, I get horrible motion sickness. So the pilot thing was taken away. And the sports agent thing, that was sort of, even before Jerry Maguire, like I always had this kind of entrepreneurial type spirit, and I love sports. So it seemed to be a natural fit. So my education was in sports management, so sports business. And unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of opportunity when I graduated. They had all these like grandiose like ideas of what the sports industry would be, but unfortunately it was like unpaid internships, and I like to make money. So that was sort of the wrong fit. And I took a job in Calgary. I was offered a job with the Canadian Hockey Association as an intern. Unfortunately, intern. I think they were going to give me a hockey jersey at the end of it. So my father sent me this job description, and it was like in sports and planning and logistics. He deleted the important part at the bottom of it with what the location was. So it was in Bosnia. He said, you know what, just try it. Because we're very civic minded. We're a very patriotic family, and we believe in giving back. My whole family. So I'm the baby of five, and all of my brothers and sisters have served at some point. So all of our family portraits, everybody was in uniform and everything. So it was sort of my way to give back. So I went over to Bosnia with the battle group, with the infantry as a civilian. I did a 6-month tour there. And when I got back, it's like, okay, now what? And two of my sisters were living in Halifax at the time, both military. And I went there and I'm like, you know what? Real estate was always sort of in the back of my mind. We had realtor friends growing up because we moved quite a bit. And in that market in Halifax, Nova Scotia, it was a 3-week course. So I'm like, you know what? Why don't I just, like, sign up, see where it goes? And I said, if I don't sell anything in like 6 months, I'll move back to Ontario and I'll figure things out. I got my license within a month, which is kind of scary if you think about it. And I went to go work with a small company, and they gave me a phone list, a headset, and off to the races we went. So it was cold calling. And I'm always quite vocal about it. I don't like cold calling. I'm not good at it. I don't enjoy it. So I'm like, you know what, if this is how you do it, then I'll give it a go. And I said, I don't know these people. What's the worst that's going to happen? And the script was so cringeworthy. But I'm like, hey, if this is what the experts were telling us to do, then let's do it. And I got a listing appointment my first day.
Oh, my God. That never happens.
It never happens. So
yeah. No wonder why you kept going with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, actually.
Try 6 months never getting a listing appointment by doing that.
It was like, and the calls were funny. Like they were like the script, like it's still burned in my mind. And I got, and again, I wasn't from Halifax, so just keep that in mind. So they gave me this list of this like kind of good neighborhood to kind of call. And it was an older gentleman, and he was retiring, and he said, wow, would luck have it, you know, the wife and I were just talking about selling our home. When can you come over? I'm like, well, I wasn't prepared for this part of the script. And I put the headset down and I went to the two managers and I said, well, where's this home located? And like, you know, don't get too discouraged. You know, it works. I said, no, I have an appointment tomorrow. Like, what? So they went with me, we signed them up. And so I know that's a rare occasion, but I'm like, hey, this was kind of fun. And the listing appointment, they're like, you seem kind of young. How long have you been doing this for? And I said, well, under a year. And off
30
I went.
Days.
One, 2 days.
Yeah, like the ink was still wet on my license. So I stayed with that company for about 2 or 3 months. I was able to get like 5 or 6 listings. Again, just like hard work. And again, I don't think I ever cold called after that day. And you'd think with that kind of success that you'd probably want to continue, but no thanks. Like I was kind of done. And I sort of went back because we have a very good reputation with the military community. I try to like enmesh myself with the Halifax military. So they had an Air Force base and a Navy base, and they moved quite a bit. So I figured, you know, go network and go get my name recognized with that. And that's sort of how I got my start. And then the tap kind of turned off. I'm like, okay, now what? And I was lucky again. So I guess like with my parents, they always like, you know, like growing up, like I wasn't the smartest kid in class. I wasn't the most athletic. I wasn't the prettiest. I wasn't anything, but I was always the hardest worker. And so my parents ingrained this kind of work ethic. And I knew if I was given an opportunity and I could show people what I could do, then it was going to pay off. And I also recognized where my weaknesses were. And just like any agent, when we're starting out, we need to align ourselves with more successful people. And like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. So I was lucky. This woman, she was like the number one producer in North America at the time. She was a big subscriber of the Craig Proctor system, which was fairly new at the time. And she was looking for somebody. And she took a chance on me. And she's like, I see a lot of myself. And so I was very lucky I had a strong female mentor, because the challenge I had with the first company, it was all male, which I get along well. But when you're learning from men, the verbiage that they use is very different coming from a man than from a woman. And it was hurting me. So I remember going to some listing appointments and using word for word what these guys were saying that worked. And I remember one appointment, I think it was like the whole the commission talk. Like, what are your fees? And the comeback was, you know, how would you like it if I asked you to take a pay cut? Yeah. And when they said it, they sound funny and oh, ha ha. Right. But when I said it to this guy, I remember the look on his face and he's like, you bitch, you know, you can leave my house. And so I recognized that if I was going to succeed, I needed to be mentored by a female. And she, to this day, I owe every success that I have to her, because she was a powerhouse. Like, she makes me look lazy. And we were listing 30, 40 houses a month. I was going on 5, 6 listing appointments a day with her, and I was in the car. So that knowledge, like how she negotiated, how she spoke to clients, all that stuff that we never learn and we kind of fumble around, I was like in the car with her. She worked my ass off. She didn't pay me very much, but she promised me, she's like, just stick with me for about a year. She's like, you'll get 10 years of knowledge and you'll learn everything you'll need to know. And that's, I was lucky. She worked me hard. It wasn't easy. It wasn't handed to me. I sacrificed a lot. I was 26 at the time, sacrificed my social life, sacrificed a lot and just ingrained myself. So the joke was, so her name was Mariana. So they used to call me Mini Anna, and everything she did, I just like, it worked for her. And she didn't come from a real estate dynasty either. She was a hard worker, single mom. I'm like, I'm just going to do what she does. And I still like everything, even now, 20 years later, it's still in my mind. So, yeah. So that's kind of a long version of kind of my background. So,
well, just that tail end part there, I think that's so important, because people just see someone, there's a lot of successful people, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to align with them and how they are successful. So the fact that you actually went and like sought after someone who you aligned yourself with, and then okay, now you can see yourself saying those things.
Yes.
I think that's important.
It is.
Because I was the same way. My first team, the team lead was very like manly and big and strong and like
Paul Greenberg.
I'm not. Yeah. So like when he said things, it didn't come across the same way because I didn't have that intimidating kind of like bully like attitude. I was too nice.
Yeah.
So I think that's like super, super cool. How many homes did you sell that first year?
I did 110.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Eric's had never even been in 110 homes.
I was wondering where you're going to go with that one. Anytime someone says about their first year of success, Matt immediately looks down on his screen and then looks to me to deliver that same line every single time.
Yeah, you got
I also liked what you said when you were cold calling. You said you weren't prepared for this moment in the script. I think that's super relatable for agents that are learning a script because I felt like that all the time where I had like five or six things to say. But of course, they're not just going to follow that exact
they never do.
Script. They never do.
And they never do.
You don't know what to do after that. So it just takes such an enormous amount of time to figure out responses to each one of those. But I can't believe you got a listing appointment, your first call. You got to be the only one in the history of the world to do that.
I think it was like my 24th call. But I tell you, my first day, it was gut-wrenching and like just calling people and like disturbing them. Like I admire people who have that ability and that knack. So I recognize like, okay, if I'm going to make a living here, like cold calling is not going to be the way because I didn't like it. So I was always like, so I remember like my father always saying like, you know, you never want to be in a room like, you never want to be in a room where you don't kind of stand out. And because like my whole life, like I was always kind of the underdog, like I was like the only girl on my street. So I kind of stood out for that. So I always use sort of like those opportunities to kind of stand out in a good way and kind of work it to my favor. And I always worked in kind of male dominated or like even my program in school was male dominated, like sports management. I think there was like five women. When I was in Bosnia, I was on a camp with 500 male soldiers. And so I was able to kind of relate to men, but have kind of a feminine kind of side. So there's a soft side. I have a very strong masculine professionally, but people are always surprised that I'm as kind of tomboy as people. So it kind of worked. So, but then when I realized like in real estate, it was what could I use to my advantage? So I'd go to places where I was the only realtor and I still do it. And I encourage people, like you don't see me at a lot of, and I get criticized for this quite a bit. I don't go to a lot of broker events or whatever, because to me, that's valuable time. And I could be in a room with potential clients. So I'm very strategic about where I go. So in Halifax, for example, I signed up for a dance class and like, I have no rhythm. I love music. And this woman was standing next to me and she's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I'm looking for something fun to do. I didn't know, like, I didn't have any like friends. Like I had two sisters there and she turned out to be a very good client of mine. She's like, oh, I signed up for this. I'm going through a divorce. I got her listing. Her and her husband reconciled after the divorce. So I helped them both buy, sell, So that worked. So then I would go to places where it's potential clients.
That's super smart. I think Surant talks about that in his first book, how he would like sign up at like three different gyms.
Yes.
And he would just like go to the same, Byron talks about going to the same coffee shop every day.
Yep.
So is that's pretty much like how you built your whole business? There was no cold calling, no door knocking. Was it
definitely
like that?
No door knocking.
Open houses or?
Open houses. Yes. But because of my role with Mariana, the first year so she had a mega team. So, we were the listing agents. And this is where I see the benefit of big teams, but I also see kind of the not so good thing about big teams, because we'd go in and we meet with the sellers and then it'd be like an assembly line. So we had like a client care person, buyer's agents. So the feedback that I was getting from clients, it's like, you know, we saw you, we trusted you, we liked you, but we haven't seen you since. So after about a year and a half with her, I went off on my own and I had a pretty good clientele and I was able to kind of build from that. And one thing, like, and I'm still very, very hands-on with my clients. Like they text me, they call me, like, so they know it's me, because people didn't want to be passed along. And that's just my brand. And I know some people who have great teams that it works well for them. It's just not my style. And maybe I'm a bit of a micromanager, some people might say. So that's why I've always had kind of a smaller, kind of tighter like team aspect.
Going into listing appointments with a huge team is a crazy move. I've been a part of it where we're sitting there and it's me and it's my friend Neil and it's Alfonso and Bjorn. These are not made up names. These are the people that were on my team. Sounds like a Sesame Street lineup that I just mentioned. But there isn't Bert and Ernie and Cookie Monster. There was four of us sitting at a listing appointment. And it's just, it's insane because it's like you have two people that are doing the talking and then we're both sitting there like, you know, like interns basically. Yeah. And when you start passing along all of your tasks to your team, you really do lose that connection. So I feel you with that assembly line.
And I think too, like one thing, like I really like one thing that I still love is the people aspect of real estate. Like I love about 99.9% of my clients, I love them. Like wow. I miss them. And, you know, I get one jerk a year we don't need to keep in touch with, or we just didn't resonate, but I really, really like the people. So if they chose me out of all the other choices, I felt like there's a certain obligation to be very hands-on and to make sure that they were taken care of. And it's something that I still am very hands-on with all of my clients. And it doesn't matter what the price point is.
Yeah. So you had a very successful career, very good start in Halifax.
Yeah,
you went on your own for 5 years.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, this is too easy. I'm going to move to Toronto now and try it all over again.
So what's interesting is, I was having a really good run. Like on average, I was doing about 85 to 90 deals a year. And if you like think back, like, and this is going to be like, you should do like a time travel thing. This is before smartphones. This is before Facebook. This was before any form of social media. And, you know, we were like handwriting our clauses and faxing them. And it was a lot of face to face. So a friend of mine was visiting me in Halifax. And he's like, you know what? He's like, you're doing great in Halifax, but let's see what you really got in Toronto. I'm like, okay. And, you know, and I was at a point in my life where if I was going to stay in Halifax, it was the time to really like really, really double down on it. And in 2007, I came to Toronto. I was looking around at different brokerages. I'm like, yeah, like this is going to be easy. Like, why not? And then on that trip, I met a guy, fell in love, and it accelerated the process. So within 6 months, sold my house, sold my business, and moved to Toronto. And it was a rude awakening because even though we're in the same country, it took 6 months for my license to get transferred over. My boyfriend, well, now my ex, he really liked me when I was successful. He really liked me when I was making money and doing well, but he had a hard time when I wasn't successful. And we broke up, obviously. And then while this was happening, the recession hit. So I was heartbroken. I basically, my income dropped 90%, no friends, because all of my friends were his friends. So I had to start all over. And I look back and it was pretty scary. And I had to pay bills. And part of me almost thought about going back to Halifax, but my dad's very tough. And he's like, you don't go back with your tail between your legs. He's like, you made a decision. You're in Toronto. You're going to kill it. You're going to work your ass off. And then you go back to Halifax with like the Stanley Cup. You don't go back as a loser. You go back as a winner. And
that is pretty harsh.
Like very, very tough. And that's
you have to win
why...
the Stanley Cup to go back there. That's impossible.
You don't go back as a person. Loser. Especially like the Stanley Cup in Toronto. We know that's not going to happen. So.
Yeah.
Big win last night, though.
Yeah.
I was there. Yeah. Not that I care.
So I worked hard and, you know, and I had to pay bills. So I took I took odd jobs. I was working on demolition crews because nobody would hire me. Nobody thought that I could do anything. I was taking jobs at I was going for interviews at call centers. Nobody would hire me. So it was like a 3-4 months of constant rejection. And then trying to like learn the market, meet people, still look like I know what I'm talking about. And a lot of my clients and my closest friends came from the dog park. And then six months later when I got my license, but it's still like, it was a tough, like it probably set me back 5-6 years professionally for that move.
So what were you doing once you got into Toronto? like you're going to dog parks where you're signing up for dance classes still and like doing that stuff? Or
I signed up for a few cooking classes. But what I did is I wanted to know the market. So I used to walk my dog everywhere and I would walk around different neighborhoods because Toronto is really a three-dimensional city. It's a driving city, a walking city, and a below ground. And I would walk through different neighborhoods just to get to know them. And I would like play games. I'm like, okay, if that house is listed for this amount, what's it going to sell for? Then I'd see who kind of the big players were. I'd go to their open houses. Like I'm a real estate junkie. So I had all this time and I was like working odd jobs, like just to make ends meet. Like I took jobs as like mystery shopper. I was the demolition crew. And I left my ego at the door and it was basically like rule. Like, and again, like my brand has always been like hardworking, but like, I was like really hardworking, like, you know, getting rid of like acoustic tile and demolition crews and everything. And then things just started kind of working. And then I dabbled a bit in commercial real estate. And, but I was doing residential evenings and weekends. So again, just like all immersed in it. But I had weeks probably where I had to make decisions like, do I get groceries or do I put gas in my car? So yeah. I have a hard time when people make excuses for why things aren't working for them. Like, you know, I didn't know anybody in Toronto, didn't know the neighborhood, the recession hit, I had no money. So like I turned out okay. So
something you said there about physically seeing the actual real estate, walking your dog and seeing the homes is so much more effective than sitting behind a computer screen and looking at the MLS and trying to see what is sold and remember the streets and go on Google Maps and stuff. Like that was one of the things that I enjoyed about door knocking. Probably the only thing was that I at least like drove the streets and actually started to like remember houses. So when someone talks about a listing, I could say, oh, I've actually seen it. Like I know what I'm talking about with this, as opposed to it's a number in my head. There's actually go ahead.
No. Like, I think that like, you know, being able to, you know, immerse yourself into the home and then seeing kind of like how they were doing things. And the market in Toronto is very, very, very different from the Halifax market. So the other thing I did is I looked for a team. I joined a team. It was a couple and another agent. They seemed to be pretty, like they seemed to be busy. And I went on as a junior agent. Like I was one of the top producers in the Halifax market and I started at the bottom as a buyer's agent. And, you know, but again, it was like, if they had any extra, I was going to take it and align myself with them. And while I was going through this breakup and everything, they dumped me. Like I got fired like from this team. I remember we had a sales meeting and afterwards they said I wasn't performing enough. And I was going through a breakup and then I remember it like it was yesterday. Nobody's ever fired me or got rid of me because I wasn't performing. So now I was at an all-time low and
worked the day harder. Is darkest before the dawn, right, 100%. Matt? You ever seen Lord of the Rings, Two Towers? That's what the king says right before the elves come to save them against the Uruk-hai.
Yeah. And I think I've always had this like kind of fire in me, like, you know, like as the underdog, like, you know, no, you're never going to make it in Toronto. You're never going to see the success. Who are you? Who do you think you are? I'm like, okay, I'll show you. I will show you if I get an opportunity and every little success, which is like, yes. So a little bit, I don't want to sound arrogant or, you know, a chip on my shoulder, but it fueled it. And it was like, because as realtors, we're kind of like our names out there. We're like, there's a sign, like there's a bit of a humiliation factor too, if you're not succeeding. And so it pushed me. And
Did you, was there like one deal or one client that like changed everything for you in Toronto?
I would say yes. When I was working with this team, they sent me off to show a home and I was able to get them to buy the home and they got me to list their home. And that was sort of the pickup. And what was interesting was sort of the rude awakening of how different the terminology was. So in Halifax, it was a slower market time. Like I had some listings that were, you know, 1 to 2 years sometimes on the market. So I think, and in Toronto, when I came here, like, you know, our offers in Halifax, it was like, you know, conditional on financing and water tests and home inspections and sale of purchaser's property and, you know, that knowledge. So when I came to Toronto, it was this list low strategy to get more and get to offers and no conditions. So I remember my first, this first listing in particular, I had multiple offers. And I didn't really know what that was because I'd never seen it before. And they use this term, oh, we have an offer registered for you. I'm like, I don't know what that means. And so I went into the office. I said, oh, I'm looking for this like sign-up book for this registry that they're talking about. I said, I don't know what that means. And then I got the offers and I was looking and I was so used to having so many pages, so many clauses. And I looked down, I'm like, there's nothing to this. And, you know, we sold it above asking. And, you know, in Halifax, we used to have deposit checks for like $2,000-$3,000. And here is like $50,000, $75,000. And I remember calling my friends back home, basically saying like, I just sold a house, but I'm kind of nervous because we sold it firm and there's no contingencies and there's nothing. And I think it's done. And I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be easy. So I would say that was the one.
That was, I've always wondered, I don't know if anyone else has ever wondered this. Who was the agent who came up with the pricing low strategy? Like there had to be that one guy or girl at one point who was just like, watch this. I got an idea. Does anyone know who it is? Who do you think it is? Barbara Cochran?
Corcoran.
Corcoran. Yeah. Probably her. I was thinking of Bob
whatever, Costas.
The guy. No, hey. Cochran, the guy who sings... The guy who sings Life is a Highway. Mm. Anyways.
Tom Cochran.
There it is.
There you go.
See? You're the new host, Anna. Eric can't help me out with this. Although you and Eric would probably really bond on your sports. Eric loves sports.
I do.
He can tell you.
I can tell you everything. Maybe not about hockey, though. But okay. I liked what you said about like Jerry Maguire. I saw that and I was like, I have to become a sports agent.
Yes.
But I never did anything about it. So I became a real estate agent. Now I just talk about
which is other pretty close.
Now I just talk about, But like we had this guy, Scott Boris, come in and talk to our class at USC. And he represents people who are signing $300, $400 million contracts, like Bryce Harper and Alex Rodriguez. And the guy was just such a badass. And like they make so much money, but they're dealing with athletes, which is brutal as it could be dealing with crazy sellers. But I want to get into how you guys connected because you guys just came out with an unbelievable listing video.
Thank you.
A listing that, how expensive is it? Is it 14 point?
It's 14,500. Yeah.
14,500. So you experienced agent, Matt becoming an experienced agent, huge social media presence. How did you guys connect and kind of form this little mini team?
Matt, you go ahead. Or do you want to hear from me?
I want to hear from you.
Okay. So Matt,
what was your lens looking in when you saw me?
So I joined the agency last year and I was with Sotheby's for 10 years beforehand and it was time for a change. So one thing that I really resonated with me was the agency was basically, I liked what they were doing kind of media wise and promotion and everything. And it was time for a change and I liked what the agency was doing. So I went. And I didn't know who Matt Leonetti was because again, I'm 20 years in. So, you know, social media and stuff is sort of, you know, we've adapted to it. And then I heard about Matt Leonetti and I'm like, okay, that's great. And then, you know, looked him up and stuff. I'm like, oh, like respected and everything. I'm like, oh, like, you know, like obviously it works for him. And then, you know, like looked at some of his stuff and thought he was like the cool kid. I'm like, okay, it works for him. And I thought, you know, that's really cool, but I don't know if that would like that style would work with me type thing. And, but respected it because I'm like, you know what, like, you know, it's an evolution of what we're seeing with the industry. And that's what I love about it. So I've had this listing and I got this listing because they followed me on Instagram and, Matt reached out, what was it a few months ago, I guess, or.
Yeah, I reached out because I lost that $3 million listing. I was like, damn, lost that. And it was because I didn't have, and I have some like buyer, like luxury buyer under my belt, but not like a lot of luxury, like maybe two luxury listings, really. I was more on the buy side and they wanted to go with someone who had more luxury listing. So when I called you, I was just like kind of venting at that point.
Yeah.
And then you were like kind of looking for a change or a shakeup or something, it seemed.
Yeah.
And then we just got to talking a lot more.
So you combined experience with marketing and leverage with Matt's social media.
Well, yeah. And the other thing too, what I found, and again, it's going back to early on, it's like when you recognize what your weaknesses are and what your strengths are, you need to align and collaborate with people. And I'm a big believer, like, you know, I've always encouraged younger agents to come into my listings because we all know it's about the listings in this industry. And if you don't have any listings, you're just not going to survive. So with like, because somebody took a chance on me early on in my career, I've always encouraged other agents, like, use my listing. Like, I paid for all the staging, everything. Go promote it. Like, get yourself out there and associate with other listings. So I've always believed in that collaboration. So when Matt reached out, I'm like, you know what? I capture kind of a different audience and a different market. And I loved what he was doing creatively. And so I said, well, you know, I really like what you're doing. And, you know, if we're trying to get more eyes and more kind of attraction to some of these listings, it's going to be win-win. And, you know, and then after like kind of seeing and what he was doing, I'm like, wow, I really respected him and really liked him. And I'm like, you know what? Yes, that I think this would be great. And it's just been a lot of fun because, you know, the industry can be very lonely and very, you know, we're trying different things. You know, I was happy, like, you know, my videos do okay, but like, you know, nothing to what his were doing and a whole wide audience that, you know, how could that hurt us? Like, it's only going to win, not just for him professionally, for me professionally, and our clients will win. And then it's just exciting because our new office opened as well. So it's like perfect timing. And I've always believed in my life that the perfect people kind of come into your life when they're supposed to. And I was kind of bored. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do now? And yes. So when he reached out, I was actually at the house. I'm like, this is fantastic. But I said, I'm like, okay, we're going to have to go a little bit more serious on some of my videos because some of my clients are a little bit more traditional and maybe a little bit more reserved. And, but because he's such a creative genius, you know, he came up with these amazing ideas and everything. So I was a huge fan and actually I was quite honored too, because, you know, you don't realize, you know, kind of what other people, I was like actually quite flattered that he reached out because of his like creativity and his respect in the industry. So I was actually very flattered.
And this video is really good. It was just posted, it depends when you're watching it, but recently posted on Matt's page, and it's him going up in a bike, and it's still funny. Like, Matt, why don't you just describe the video? But it's still funny, but it's like, it's such a different style than the usual, like Matt and his car ranting. It's like, it still has the Leonetti flavor to it, but it's showcasing the listing as opposed to you know, his thoughts, basically.
I think it's refined funny.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of, I think things can still be funny. And more than that, I think it just puts you in a good mood. It's about positivity at the end of the day. Just like always seeing the positive side of what's going on, and the whole kind of tag in it is, you know, every day's a good day. I get my car stolen and I'm riding a bike up, and then the tag is every day's a good day when you end it here at the listing. And it's still fun and funny, but I think very professional. It's shot very well.
Beautifully shot.
Yeah. So, and when we were talking about it a bit, we were saying like, there's a space for us here because, you know, Anna has the years and years of luxury experience and I have the marketing and the eyeballs and the attention. A lot of the luxury space is very copy and paste and a little cookie cutter at this point. A lot of it's very stuffy in my mind, and it's a very specific audience. And I think we can lighten it up in a way that still makes it very professional. And like Anna said, it just benefits our clients at the end of the day, because we're doing something different that people actually want to watch. And, you know, the video is already doing well. And I think clients, even if, you know, the video doesn't always like sell the house, they appreciate the work you put into it. Mm-hmm. And you just gain more respect with your agent, and they appreciate that you're really trying and you're taking out all the stops to try and sell their home for the most money.
You're so right about there not being this creative wave in the luxury market, because all the funny videos we see, they're usually outside of a house that isn't a $10, $15 million house. Yeah. You know, Dan O'Neill's done a good job because he's in, like, you know, he's had some $4, $5, $6 million listings where he's doing it But this is one of the first ones that I've seen that's like super high value that still has that like funny twist to it. Actually, Tim Smith in Newport, the Teach Me How to Dougie guy, he's great at this. So he's done a bunch of kind of funny song parodies and stuff. And he's, you know, he has like 20, 30, $40 million listings as well. But I think this is kind of carving a new space where this can be done in the luxury market in a way that's a little bit more, not necessarily as edgy, but it's just, it's more tasteful. Refined for the market. It's tasteful. Exactly.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun. It was a good day. So yeah, we have a lot of other ideas and already like very positive response. Like, you know, again, because Matt's market and my market were different, but like, you know, I think kind of the overlap of the two is beneficial, and I'm having fun again. Like, not that I was like not having fun before, but it's fun, like, you know, to bounce ideas and, you know, to be able to collaborate, because like I was always considered fairly creative, but Matt is so much more creative. And then, you know, you take kind of my serious kind of my approach to things too. And I think it's win-win. So we're very, very excited with it. Yeah. I know I am. I don't know about you.
And it's, I am extremely excited. And and the thing is like on paper, it's not really the matchup you would think. We're not the two people who you'd pick out and be like, yeah, they're going to team up.
Yeah.
You know, which I love. Because I think it's like Fleetwood Mac. There's three singers and they all sing like different styles of music. So when you listen to them, you get different styles of music.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is like a win-win for everyone. So I loved it so much. And it's been so fun for me because, Eric, you know, as you pump out so much content all the time, like sometimes you want something that's like different and a challenge. And like, how can, you know, we make this fun and funny and interesting, but, you know, professional. And like, I can't just go up there and rant in the driveway and say fuck 1,000 times.
I could
I could do whatever I want, but yeah. And the cool thing about it is like leveraging it, so like even me just doing the light promotion we were doing up until this point on this property, I got a referral for a $1.5 million property, and Anna came on the listing appointment with me, and we got the listing. And like it's just like being able to leverage it now. And
I think they thought I was your assistant, which was funny.
Yeah, she was taking so many notes. And I was like, she's taking notes on a pen and paper, notes.
But I think too, like the strength and like, you know, there's that male-female kind of dynamic. And then there's the younger. And then like, even like, you know, we went into this, like this appointment that Matt had, and we just like collaborated very, very well with it. And, you know, like I had like the wife kind of talk to me about stuff. And then it was like a 2-hour appointment. I think it went very well. So, you know, I think it's not just going to be like my big listings. I think it's kind of the start of something kind of fun together. And, you know, we're excited to like kind of take over the market here.
It's good. I feel like we're on a press conference now. Yeah, I think we're going to do real, real great in the tail end of this. I mean, I think we've got to come out strong in the third period and really keep our sticks on the ice. But I do want to transfer a little bit, because we've had a lot of people on this podcast, and when I go talk and Eric goes talk at conferences, so sometimes we get people who come up to us and we don't really know how to answer the question because we're not in their situation. So for example, I had someone, I know Eric's had this before too, a woman came up to me and was saying something like, I love what you do, but I can't do that because I'm a woman and they're not going to take me seriously, or I'm not going to be as respected. Now you are extreme, like I said at the beginning, extremely respected in our city, as like a boss agent, and you really like have your shit together.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that? Is it just something you don't even pay attention to and you just, you know, keep your blinders on, or how do you kind of navigate your way through this industry?
So it's because I had two strong female kind of mentors. They basically coached me. And I remember my first mentor, Mariana, she basically said, don't, like, you know, you're here to do a job and you don't ever want to your reputation or anything to kind of follow you around. So kind of like, you know, be careful when you're dealing with men. Like, you know, there's that fine line with being flirty and being kind. But, you know, also like, you know, basically like don't date clients and don't date other realtors. Those were the two big things for me. And successfully, I can say I may have gone on dates after the deal was done, but in a professional context. So, and again, like, so going back to when I wanted to be a sports agent, my father, and because it's like more male, the money was with male dominated sports, and still is. My father's like, you know, don't ever be in a room where people can speak negatively about you. Like, don't have a reputation for, you know, and I hate to say it, sleeping around or being too familiar, because you don't, like, you'll be a joke and that will follow you for the rest of your career. And in terms of like my professional, again, it's hard work. And, you know, has it been perfect and easy? No, like I've tried different things like over the years. A few years ago, like during COVID, I was having a little bit more fun with videos. And a few of my friends called me and they're like, you know, it doesn't, like, yes, you're having fun, but it's actually kind of hurting you a little bit, because that's not your, like, I basically have my professional persona and I have my vacation persona. And I don't let those two blend very often. And when I'm in a room with potential clients or colleagues, it's a very serious, but when I let my hair down in the privacy of, so I'm very, very protective of that. And sometimes, you know, it could be a bit of an overlap. And, but because I had to work so hard, I wasn't going to let a bad decision, like, you know, over drinking at an event or dating the wrong person to take, for that to take me down. So that I would say is the kind of key thing. And again, like, it's a challenge for women because, you know, and it works for some people, like, you know, they're gorgeous and they're, you know, well-dressed and everything, but there's that fine line. Like when we're working with couples, you know, you don't want to be so, so good looking or so sexy that the wife is now threatened. So now you just ruled out that decision maker and you don't want to be too flirty. And so there's that fine line. So, you know, has it been perfect? No, but I think over time and experience, I've just really, really, really dialed it in.
Everyone stop for a second. This market is a little bit tighter than it has been in the past few years, which means leads are not necessarily banging down the door. But you know who isn't worried right now? Agents who use Boomtown, the number one rated real estate CRM in the game.
That's right. Boomtown was actually founded in 2008, Eric. Do you know that?
Yeah, the same year the Phillies won the World Series against the Rays. How could I forget?
I'll take your word for it. In the middle of a housing crisis, their CEO, Greer Allen, built it from the ground up with the explicit intention of empowering agents to be successful no matter the market. So if you're ready to build a truly bulletproof business, visit boomtownroi.com/overask. Plus, see how you can score 750 big ones in free digital advertising. That's boomtownroi.com/overask.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of like the key. It's basically, you know, this is a reputation and a referral business. And I wasn't going to let, you know, like some slip up to ruin all that hard work.
Yeah. Yeah. Your reputation is everything. And I've been trying to be super conscious about that, even just going to real estate conferences. And it's difficult because everybody is drinking and partying. And you have these different moments with people. You're like, oh my God, this person turned into a complete lunatic for, you know, from 12 to 12:30 at night. And you just have to remember, like, that's how this person's going to remember me by. So
100%. And
you
have to keep it together. And again, now with like, especially with like social media and everything, one wrong decision can definitely, like, it can destroy, it could ruin a very good career. And, you know, over the years, like, you know, I've had people that I've trusted who may have not represented me in the proper, like I had a bad social media thing happen to me about 2 years ago, and an unedited video went out. So I batched all my videos and an unedited one went out, and it got posted and it got tagged, but my team didn't tell me that it was blowing up. And I come back and my face is like, so we have this like, this thing called BlogTO in Toronto. It's kind of like gossip and kind of more like more of a social magazine. It's not credible journalism. And I had no idea that this video had gone viral. And it was like cringeworthy video by real estate agent.
Oh my God.
And then it was a friend of mine that reached out to me and said, you know, do yourself a favor and don't read the comments. I said, well, I don't know what you're talking about. And so what I had done is I batched about eight different videos in one day. And I was doing a series on, you know, top three neighborhoods to buy if you're single, top three neighborhoods to buy if you're a young family. And I'm a big supporter of local business. So I wanted to use it as an opportunity to maybe showcase different neighborhoods and all this. So my producer was standing in front of me, and he had just bought in this neighborhood in Toronto called King West. And he said, so I said something like, well, obviously King West is my top neighborhood for if you're single. So it got filmed. And then later that afternoon, I was filming in a different neighborhood because I had a few listings there. So two very distinct neighborhoods. So 8 hours of video got sent off to the editor. And when they did the video and they posted it, they had me talking about how great King West is, but I'm in Yorkville, and they posted a bunch of B-roll, and I was like kind of like having fun behind the scenes, but the way it was edited and the autocorrect, the text and everything was showing the wrong names. So then it got picked up and it was tagged with a Drake song that was quite popular, but at no time during that weekend did they tell me like, hey, we're getting all this like pushback and everything. Like, I didn't say anything racist. I didn't say anything untoward. It was my opinion about this neighborhood. And because like, I was actually in the middle of a very, like my biggest deal ever at that time, I was distracted with that. And my phone was blowing up. I was on like local, people were talking about me on local radio, and a client called me and he's like, they're talking about you on this local radio station. So I called in. I said, oh, I hear you're talking about that King West realtor. I'm like, yeah, yeah. Do you know her? I said, yeah, it's me. And they're like, oh, and they're kind of like, they're two cool guys and stuff. And I said, listen, like, I'm a real estate agent. I said, my job is to get attention and draw attention to different areas that I think are good. That's what people hire me for. And I said, at the end of the day, it's my opinion. If I think that neighborhood is the best neighborhood, then I'm entitled to that. And, you know, I didn't say anything like, anything wrong. And I said, I also find it very flattering that people think I produce and edit all my own videos. I said, I'm not a professional documentarian or professional. I said, I'm a real estate agent. And I said, you know, all this pressure for video and social media content and everything. I said, you know, I'm doing the best I can here. And I said, at the end of the day, like, yeah, I got attention, but you know, I said, was it a slow news day? And then actually I was featured in a national newspaper that week on cyberbullying, because not only was I getting kind of pushback on, you know, I was being described as like looking like an airhead. Nobody's ever described me as an airhead. My team, again, they let it go out, and I took the heat for it. And I said, you know, I don't watch everything before it goes out. And, but I was getting death threats. I was getting,
oh my God.
I had people say like, you know, they'll track me down, like, you good for nothing realtor will track you down at your open house. I hope you get murdered. You know, I was called a bully because, well, you name it. They were coming after me for my looks. They were coming after me for everything. So after that, I had to change teams, obviously. I owned it, but I turned the negative and I've talked about it, but like the cyberbullying and everything. So I stopped and I went back to kind of my roots because I changed teams, and because my brand was always, kind of like serious, I went back to more of that approach because this team, and this is where I was relying on like a younger kind of like, let's say cooler audience, like for people. I said, I don't know what works. I don't know trends. I don't know any of this stuff. So I was relying on them for, you know, fun content, but it could have destroyed me negatively career-wise. So now I'm extremely conscientious of who works with me, who gets the chance to promote it. But it could have been, ahead.
What was it posted on? Was this uploaded to Instagram or YouTube? To TikTok. Okay.
But what was interesting during all of that, none of my clients even knew about it because it was a whole different sphere of people, because I deal with more of like, you know, say 40 plus, mm-hmm. TikTok's not a thing for them. So for days, like 500,000 views and comments and all this stuff, none of my clients even knew about it until like they read about it in the national newspaper.
TikTok is vicious as it is to real estate agents, even if you're just uploading a normal video. So they could jump at someone who uploaded the wrong video, I'm sure it was crazy. And excuse me. Also, anytime someone says, don't read the comments, you're going to read the comments and you know the comments are going to be bad. So that must have been a really, really scary couple of days.
That's because you and I didn't know each other then. And like, you know, that's a whole different world for me because, you know, I was getting kind of like moderate success and everything. But what it really made me focus on was like, you know, having the right people around. And I, like when I let them go, they're like, well, we got you to go viral. I said, yeah, but like I was described like professionally as looking like an airhead. And I said, I've worked damn hard my entire life. I said, I'm not going to let your carelessness ruin me.
Yeah. Like that was their, that was what they said. They got you to go viral. That was their.
Yeah. And they didn't take any responsibility. So when I was interviewed, I took it. I said, you know, I don't always have control and I delegate a lot. I said, I'm a busy agent. Like, you know, like there's some weeks I'm like 4 or 5 deals in. And I like, to me, like I always kind of delegated what I wasn't that good at. And because I find it, you know, it's not my area of expertise and I was hiring these other people, but I learned from it. But, and it was kind of like kind of scary for a few days because it didn't seem to be going away. And, but then like the interview with the Toronto Stars, then I've been asked like to speak on podcasts and stuff about it. I'm like, you know, I'll turn it into a positive. And what do they say? Like all press is good press. And
oh, yeah, I mean, they hang on. They're savages. I mean,
they are.
If anyone ever fumbles the Star Spangled Banner, I mean, we've seen that. Half the people can't recite the words in it. But if someone on a big stage, you know, it goes out, they're done. So if you, you know, accidentally say Yorkville instead of the Kingsway or wherever you were, you're screwed.
Oh, no. And I think, too, like, and I kind of shied away, like for about a month or two after, I kind of shied away from it. I was a little gun shy, but then I'm like, you know what? Like people don't care. Like at the end of the day, they don't care. And, you know, I encourage people to like, you know, and Matt, like, you know, not everything lands all the time. And like some resonate, some don't. And, you know, like recently, like some of your, like people are commenting on like what you're wearing. It just seems that's the flavor of the week. And, you know, and because for whatever reason in this, like people hate real estate agents. So I've always been big on elevating the perception of real estate, either through education, showing people, you know, what we do behind the scenes. And it's not just about, you know, the flashy cars or the look. And I find now with like the economy and everything kind of people are struggling. Now it's not the time to show the flash. And that's why I loved like with our video, like you're on a bike, you're not in a Ferrari, you're not in anything. So kind of the juxtaposition of, you know, fun, luxury, but without being flashy and douchey, where I find, you know, and that's why a lot of people don't like realtors. They think we make too much money. We don't earn it. And, you know, so I'm big on elevating kind of elevating the public perception of the real estate industry. And I try to do that more through education. Like, you know, like I just firmed a deal this week. Well, people were criticizing, oh, it's been on the market for longer. And I said, yeah, but we held out. I got my clients $100,000 more. Like it didn't happen overnight. And there was the 6 months of preparation before. And I think we need to be more vocal about what we offer as professionals, not just, you know, the days on the market are over. Like, you know, we're here as their advocates. We're here to represent them. And I find like even I find some of the younger ages, it worries me that they're more in it for themselves versus what the clients are. And I've always been so client focused that I sacrificed my own personal and social life for my clients. And now I'm scared with them when I see a lot of agents, you know, they go on showings and it's about them and their content and not about the client and showing them the home or building the relationship with. So that's where I'm pretty vocal about it and pretty, you know, like it or like love it or not like it. But I think if younger agents are going to carry on their career, they need to start honing in a little bit more of what we're offering as professionals and not about them. So
we've talked about that. And we said this in the last episode where, you know, Eric for sure is, he has created a lot of good, but also we feel like we've created some monsters as well with in the content space, because there's a fine line to like good content and clever content. Yeah. Go Eric.
The industry just like rewards mediocrity in terms of content. Like I think just the industry is begging for all of these people to come up and speak on these panels and everyone's looking for new stars and new funny content creators. So it's just kind of lowered the bar in terms of what everyone deems as successful. And I think it has created these monster, not monsters, but just people that are too focused on like, I just want to build my social brand and I want to get like real estate famous, as opposed to, do you want to sell more houses and then actually convert for your clients? Like, where's the line there? So it's cool to see the dichotomy there.
Nice word.
Yeah, thank you. I don't even know if it was correct, but
no, I think it's correct.
Comparison between two
juxtaposition.
Well, yeah, juxtaposition would have been better.
Well, that's awesome. Guys know about me?
I think we're good. We've got an hour. We're normally around 40 minutes, and we're at 56 minutes. So I think we've covered the bases here. Eric, do you have any? Sometimes Eric comes in with a quick six other questions.
Yeah, I got six questions real quick to finish off. No, I thank you for coming on. I think it's awesome, the little team that you and Matt are building. And we look forward to the future videos and seeing the juxtaposition of your experience and luxury listings with his humor and growing experience. So I think it's awesome to see. And I think it's super inspirational for agents out there that maybe haven't hit the luxury mark yet. Go team up with someone that's doing luxury. Say you have a huge social presence. This is the perfect thing to do. Call them as your mentors. Matt wasn't even calling to team up. He was calling you to get advice on a listing that he lost. And, you know, coming at it from an approach of, hey, I want to learn, is a great way to go about it. So
it really is. And I find, like, even with some of my peers, like, you know, people who've been in the business for 20 plus years, they're intimidated by a lot of the social media, and they're intimidated. And there's a bit of, I don't want to say like snobbery about it, because they look at, say, people who are maybe who have a bit of social presence, but they don't really respect them professionally because they can't back it up. So I think what Matt and I are doing is showing, like, you know, Matt's also a very good agent, and, you know, like, so I think it's giving kind of credibility that way. And to show some of these other agents who are trying to, like older agents or more experienced agents, like, you know, if they're going to evolve and have a longer career, they need to start looking at these collaborations, and they need to start looking at, this is the way now, because I want a listing on Sunday because I was younger and they liked my approach, because I was like, this other agent, she couldn't even keep up. So I think, you know, it's a good thing for some of, like, say, like my kind of my vintage of realtor friends to look at it and to think, you know, if you're like, kind of look around and read the room a little, and, you know, you might want to, you know, maybe accept the help of a younger agent who can bring something different to the table. Because it's what I find fascinating is how quickly our industry is changing, and it's always evolving that way. And if they don't, then it's going to be interesting to see. So I'm glad that Matt reached out when he did, because I still have a few years left in me. So he got some big numbers to hit.
Well, with that, I would say you need to embrace the change, not be resentful of it. Because I think if you're resentful of it, especially in the market we're in, you're not going to evolve at all. So don't shy away from it. We all have weaknesses. We all have strengths. Know them. And that's important. And, you know, get your ego out of it and find someone who's awesome and team up, and now we're going to crush it. So we're already crushing it, but now we're going to crush it more.
Amazing.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
You too.